This podcast was recorded on Thursday, September 22nd at 11:08 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this.
Yeah, like we'll give as much attention to 3 million Americans being without power as we do the funeral for a foreign queen who died 2 weeks ago.
Yep. Good luck, though, to those folks in Puerto Rico. They've had a tough few years.
Let's talk Ohio politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and all those Snollygosters or shrewd, self-serving politicians who during campaign season have so many promises and so little time. I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up in the podcast, more fights over LGBTQ rights at the State Board of Education. But first, the controversy over debates has come to Ohio.
Yes, it certainly has. All over the country, candidates refusing to participate in the age-old tradition of live political debate. Most of those refusing to celebrate or throwing up roadblocks to debates are Republicans like Senate candidate Herschel Walker of Georgia.
Nebraska candidate for governor, the Republican Jim Pillion, has refused to debate. In Pennsylvania, Republican Doug Mastriano has rejected a debate for governor. Same story in North Carolina.
Democrats have also been reluctant to debate in some cases. In Arizona, Democratic Secretary of State Katie Hobbs refusing to debate her GOP challenger. Maryland Democratic candidate for Governor Wes Moore also refused to debate, so it is somewhat of a bipartisan issue.
Yeah, here in Ohio, it is the Republicans in the top races refusing to debate. This week, Governor Mike DeWine and U.S. Senate candidate J.D. Vance rejected invitations from the Ohio Debate Commission to appear at debates hosted by that independent organization.
One reason Republicans give is that the commission, according to them, is not neutral. Vance's campaign points to the commission's executive director, who has run for office as a Democrat and contributed to Democratic candidates, including Vance's rival, Tim Ryan, although it was 8 years ago.
Yes. And they complain the Republican primary debate the commission hosted this past spring was unfair because the moderator fact-checked candidates' false statements. Here's one of several examples from that debate. Seconds after the moderator said claims that the number of votes cast in 2020 exceeded the number of registered voters, the moderator said that was false. Candidate Mike Gibbons said this.
There are problems with this election. 5 million more people voted than were registered to vote, and that's according to the U.S. Census Bureau. There's a problem. We need to investigate it. The January 6th Commission should be investigating that instead of some false accusation of some kind of insurrection. Recently, there was a Wisconsin.
And again, the claim that Mr. Gibbons just made about more ballots cast than registered voters has been fact-checked and no evidence has been found to support it. We're moving on. Josh Mandel. You have 90 seconds, Josh Mandel.
The voice of that moderator should be very familiar to you. That is, of course, the voice of Karen Kassler, Ohio Public Radio's longtime State House Bureau Chief and very experienced debate moderator. And Karen joins us now. Karen, welcome back to Snollygoster.
Hey, thanks to be here. Glad to be here. Thanks, you guys.
Glad to be here and not on a debate stage. Did that give you any kind of PTSD triggering? Hearing that by Gibbons,
it was definitely out of all the debates that I have moderated, and I've been moderating debates now for well over 10 years. That one was definitely the most uncomfortable, the most difficult, the most just challenging in so many ways.
Yeah, since we just played that clip, and this is kind of the root of one of the alleged complaints that the Republicans have. Let's discuss the role of a debate moderator. I, like you, have moderated many debates, and the moderator is more than just a traffic cop. He or she does more than just say, you go, you stop, you go. Ideally, that would be the case. But when the candidates get out of hand, when they make blatantly false statements that go uncorrected, it is the journalist's role to set the record straight. Correct, Karen?
As I understand it, yes. I mean, I knew going into this debate, and again, this was seven candidates running for the Republican nomination for U.S. Senate. This was the only event where all seven candidates appeared on stage. And as the sole moderator, the sole questioner, I had an obligation to fact check. I mean, it's not fair to people who are looking for information about candidates to allow candidates to state blatant falsehoods. And so I called them out when they did. And I mean, the number one question that I was asked to ask the candidates was about their views about the 2020 election and whether they felt it was stolen or not. And that, of course, is flying in the face of all the, I mean, more than 60 court cases where there's no evidence that Trump won the election, that it was stolen, all sorts of audits around the country. There's never been any evidence.
Yeah, and ideally, the moderator will let the opposing candidate fact check the other one. I'm guessing that did not happen at this debate.
Right. Out of seven candidates, six of them, to varying degrees, said that they support Donald Trump in this lie that the election was stolen. The one candidate who didn't was, of course, State Senator Matt Dolan, who had said very clearly that he accepts the results of the 2020 election. He, I think, came in second, but it was a kind of a surprise given that the rest of the field was so strongly on the other side.
Yeah, I think he came in second because all the pro-Trump crowd, all the anti-democracy crowd in many ways kind of pushed each other's votes. Karen, let's get to this current cycle now. Let's start with Mike DeWine. Why is he declining to debate?
I think part of the reason that he is declining to debate, and he's been signaling this for some time, that he was not going to debate, goes to his polling shows that he's, you know, as much as 15 to 20 points ahead of Nan Whaley, the Democratic candidate who's running. He has so much more name recognition. He has four decades in public office. He's probably the best known Republican in Ohio right now. I think he feels like it's not something that he needs to do. And NPR had a piece this week with Don Gagne talking about exactly these issues of midterm debates and candidates. And some candidates are making the choice that they don't need a debate because there's no upside to it, or very little upside. And the mistakes that you could make, of course, would be amplified on social media and be used by your opponent. And I think that's kind of the space that Mike DeWine is in.
Yeah, that's sort of that's sort of the case I've been making. Like, of course he should debate, right? Morally, that's what's best for voters. But politically, I don't blame him. I don't think he should debate. I think it can only hurt him.
Yeah, well, he's up by 15, 18 points. I mean, he can make a huge gap, and it's still, so he'd win by 12. But anyway, there's still a chance, though, that J.D. Vance and Tim Ryan will debate. They have each thrown out different dates, different venues, different possible sponsors, but they're not going to take part in the debate sponsored by the Debate Commission. So what are the odds, Karen, do you think that J.D. Vance and Tim Ryan, I'm thinking that they debate up in the Youngstown area?
I think there's a good chance of that, only because that race is so volatile and Vance may feel that he needs the exposure. I mean, so many candidates now are saying the debates don't matter because people don't watch them, which I'm not sure that's the case, but certainly the idea of having a debate out there that people can pull up on demand when they're looking for information about a candidate is really important. That's part of what the Ohio Debate Commission had hoped to do, was to bring broadcasters and print organizations and everything together to make these things available to people when they were ready to make their choice on who they were going to vote for. So I think there's a possibility that Vance might decide to jump into this, but of course there's so much money in that race. The polls are all over the place. That race is going to continue to be volatile. So I don't know. I think predicting whether they're going to debate is almost as difficult as predicting who might win that race.
Yeah.
Karen, aside from the race for governor or the race for U.S. Senate, there's really an anti-debate vibe in the whole Republican Party, the National Republican Party threatening to not participate in the general election presidential debates in 2024. And that would be a huge shift away from recent history, where debates have played a major part in the election of president.
Yeah, and I think it really is a disservice to voters, because they deserve to see the candidates that they're deciding between standing on a stage in front of journalists, face to face with each other, and answering questions. There's no substitute for that. Ads are not a substitute. Editorial boards, extended interviews, these are all things that are part of the process, sure. But that does not take the place of what it's like to see somebody in that high pressure setting where they're asked about their record and what they intend to do. I think that is so important. And whether people whether there are good ratings for debates or not, who cares? The public service and the service to the voters that those provide in terms of information is critical.
Yeah, I mean, in the ratings, it really don't even matter anymore because all of these debates, I mean, I found your debate from the spring. It took me a minute to find it in the Ohio Debate Commission website. They're available online, and you can so you're not home at 8 o'clock on a Tuesday night. You can watch it the next day. You can watch it a week from now. You can watch it the day before you go to vote. So, I agree with you that people, candidates should debate. Of course, you can't make them debate, and this is a age old debate over whether to debate.
I would say though, while it looks really bleak right now for debates, you might remember in 2014. That John Kasich, then the Republican governor of Ohio, refused to debate the Democratic candidate Ed Fitzgerald, saying that he wasn't a legitimate candidate. And we were all very disappointed and thinking we were at the end of the debates then, that was just not gonna, we were never gonna get him back. Well, in 2018, when all of the statewide executive offices were open, we have a Senate race then that year, the candidates came forward and decided to debate. So I'm hoping that there will be a return to this important institution once we get past what we're dealing with right now. I'm really hopeful that there will be an opportunity to have debates again, but not this year.
But what you're saying, though, is incumbents won't debate. So we can't, like in the sort of the second term of a two-year term because of the facing of the term limits, like Mike DeWine had to debate Richard Cordray because it was close.
It was close, yeah.
And now he doesn't have to debate Nan Whaley because it's not so close. It's just it really is a messed up system.
And when you go back in time, looking back to when Mike DeWine ran against John Glenn back in the, 90s, I think it was, DeWine wanted the debates with Glenn. And Glenn was the one who said he didn't want to debate DeWine because they were, at the time, going through a pretty nasty ad war, which is probably nothing compared to what we're seeing now, of course. But I think that that's interesting to look back on history and see that there was a time when Mike DeWine was the one who wanted to debate and John Glenn, the incumbent senator, said, nah, I don't want to do that.
Yeah, and around the country, in Arizona, one of the candidate on the Republican side is a former TV anchor, obviously very good on TV. So the Democrat doesn't want to debate her because of that. In Pennsylvania, John Fetterman is recovering from a stroke, so he's still having speech problems. So he wants to, if not avoid a debate, delay it as long as possible into his recovery with Dr. Oz. And it just seems like this year, it seems like it's much more present.
I think there's another factor here that I think is important, and I think that there might be some candidates who are making the choice not to debate because they don't, or even organizations that are making the decision not to offer debates, because there are people who are running for office who are election deniers, who are spreading false information, and to put those people on for an extended period of time to allow them to continue to spread what the misinformation and disinformation, that does the opposite to serve public interest. And so I think that when candidates do make the choice of not debating because, hey, this person's just going to lie the entire time, I don't want to have to stand on stage with them and fact check them and not be able to talk about my own record, I think that's potentially something that some candidates are dealing with.
Yeah, it's very like that clip we showed. I mean, we shortened it. You did not interrupt Mike Gibbons. He mentioned those couple of things, and then he went on to mention a couple of more things. You let him finish, and then you respectfully pointed out that what he said was false, and you moved on to the next person. It was Josh Mandel, who probably said the same stuff, and
but probably worse. He was louder too.
Yeah.
Right. But, well, I mean, the only time I ever interrupted the candidates, and this is as a moderator should, because the candidates all agree to this, there are time limits.
Yeah.
And so as a moderator, you have to jump in and say, your time is up and you need to stop talking. And that was the only time that I would interrupt candidates. I did not interrupt for false claims or anything like that. I waited till they were finished. And then I stated that what you just heard was a false claim.
It's a thankless job, Karen, but you did great.
It is a thankless job. You're the referee.
It's actually one of the things about this job that I love the most, and I'm really kind of bummed about the whole situation that we won't have debates this year because I really believe in them. They're actually exciting events to do. Mm-hmm. There's an immediacy about them that's just so it just makes the job so much fun. And I'm really bummed about that. But like I said, hopefully once we get past this cycle, then we'll see things a little bit differently, maybe.
And what everyone forgets is the most important participant in a debate is not the candidates, is not the moderator, it's the viewer at home. And that's who loses out because we don't have these debates.
Absolutely.
She's a glutton for punishment who loves moderating debates, a skilled fact checker, and terrific all-around State House Bureau Chief. Karen Kassler from Ohio Public Radio, thanks again for joining Sonali Goster.
I'm so glad to be here. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Karen.
We'll be right back.
WOSU Public Media podcasts are made possible thanks to listener support. All of our digital content, such as Sonali Goster and the All Sides of the Ann Fisher podcast, depend on the generosity of listeners like you. You can give at WOSU.org or through the WOSU mobile app. And thanks.
Welcome back to Sonali Goster from WOSU Public Media. Turning now to another agency that is not supposed to be partisan, but is getting tangled up in politics this week. The Ohio Board of Education considering a resolution to officially oppose a move by the Biden administration.
The White House wants to expand Title IX protections to cover LGBTQ students. So they are going to force schools to investigate sex-based claims of discrimination or risk losing federal funding for school meal programs. That's a lot of money that a lot of families depend on. The move has drawn the ire of some state school board members like Brendan Shea.
It's awfully burdensome and heavy-handed for the federal government to force every district and school in the nation to adopt radical gender identity policies to continue receiving federal funds.
The resolution also says the State Board of Education supports a lawsuit that includes Ohio's Attorney General and several others who oppose the new federal rules. Some other members call the resolution embarrassing. Some local schools like Columbus have announced their opposition to the state resolution.
More culture war stuff. There were, I believe, 61 people who spoke at the state school board meeting this week. The overwhelming majority of them denounced this proposal. They thought it was embarrassing, disgusting, on and on and on. There are supporters. There are supporters who view this as a serious government overreach. But it's a culture war thing. And I suspect Brendan Shea has... other offices he wants to run for, quite frankly. I mean, because this is, I don't know. It's, I don't want to sound too partisan here. It seems pretty shallow to me.
There are some people who care deeply about this issue. Most people don't care. I mean, this is really a made up issue to stoke the passions of far right conservatives. So you're not going to discriminate against a certain segment of the student population. That seems like a no-brainer to me. And to call this radical indoctrination is hyperbole, factually hyperbole. And this keeps getting our attention. We keep giving it attention, of course, but we should mention that it's out there and this movement is out there. But it's really a made-up issue.
Yeah, they're making schools investigate claims of discrimination.
Well, you could argue you shouldn't tie it to school lunch funding. I can understand why you're linking that to school lunch funding. That seems to be two totally different things. Maybe you should argue that, but don't investigate claims of discrimination.
Brendan Shea's whole opposition is an anti-transgender status.
Yeah. It's not about protecting the integrity of the school lunches.
No, it's not. It's about what he views as radical indoctrination. I mean, It's very loaded language. It's very, as you say, stoking the fires. That's what he's trying to do. Turning now to our Sonali Goster of the Week Award, which honors the shrewdest politician or political move of the past 7 days. In the past, we have given the award to Governor Mike DeWine, and we've given the award to his beloved wife, Fran DeWine. This week, we're giving it to the entire DeWine family.
Well, this week, the Sonali Gosters of the Week are at least Fran and Mike DeWine's granddaughters, three of their granddaughters. They and their cross-country coaches shrewdly scheduled a cross-country meet in Cedarville at the same time Donald Trump was hosting a rally in Ohio.
Didn't the Ohio State football team do the same thing?
Yes, they did.
Governor Mike DeWine told the Youngstown Vindicator that he did not want to miss the cross-country meet because it was a nighttime meet under the lights.
Yeah, pretty unusual. I never ran under the lights when I was in high school and college. That'd be pretty cool. So he just didn't want to miss it. So he went to his granddaughter's cross-country meet. You know, as a former runner, as a current runner, former cross-country runner, I kind of endorse that. Yeah. And the girls ran pretty well. One granddaughter finished 38th out of 240 in the Division I race.
That is pretty good.
The two other granddaughters finished very strong in the Division II race in the Cedarville Friendship Cross-Country Invitational. So congratulations to them for running well and giving their grandfather a pretty good excuse to skip yet another Donald Trump rally.
That's right. So Mike DeWine's granddaughters get our Snollygoster of the Week award. That's one of the more wholesome awards we've given out. Usually they're pretty mean-spirited, like Ron DeSantis or other Donald Trump.
Maybe we're getting soft.
Getting soft in our old age. Anyway, if you have a suggestion for next week, you can send it to snollygoster@wosu.org. Also, be sure to leave us a good review on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you get your podcast. And as always, be sure to just tell your friends about us. Until next week, for our audio producer, Eric French, and our web producer, Michael DeBonis, I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.